If you've got a problem with me, you've got a problem with we.
For the past 1 month, I've been living an unemployed life, which I guess makes me an official Real Housewife.
Okay, that was literally iconic, which
I had to think about how long I've been unemployed. I was like, for the past how long? Okay. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, maybe we'll get into it. You guys, it's Andy Skrulls. It's episode AG600-ish. And it's like in 60-something yada yada, mazel tov. And I'm so excited to have back one of my favorite return guests. You know her as the recent co-host of Daily Blast Live and the NAACP Awards nominated host of Comeback with Erica Cobb, a podcast and social media show. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Erica Cobb. Erica Cobb, how are we?
I'm so good, Dame. I owe you the hugest apology. I was in New York and I could not get to you, and I feel so bad about it. I still feel so bad about it.
How dare you choose the Statue of Liberty and Brooklyn Bridge over the Clovis? How literally dare you? This is a monument, Erica Cobb. You know this.
You know, if it were the Statue of Liberty or the Brooklyn Bridge, I definitely would have chosen you and the Clovis over it. But unfortunately, I was in school. I'm doing a program with Goldman Sachs and NYU, and there was a lot going on. So I was just going.
So can you tell me a little bit about that program? Because it sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's called 1 Million Black Women, Black in Business at Goldman Sachs. And essentially, it is a way for, in my program, Black female entrepreneurs to scale their businesses. I have my production company, which I've been, you know, scaling for years, but I'm moving to the business-to-business space. And this is offering me a lot of support and knowledge about business in general, but especially when you're in a pivot, that's generally when businesses fail. And this has been just the perfect timing for me. It's been so much work, but I'm so honored to be a part of this program.
So you, as mentioned in that iconic tagline, so Daily Blast Live just ended its accomplished run. How are you feeling? A month into this new beginning is not a terribly long amount of time.
Yeah, no, we started Daily Blast Live 7 years ago. I was an original co-host. We ended with the five OGs. We all were casted together. And it was sad because obviously, you know, you work together with that many people, that amount of time. You do build, like a lot of businesses will say, we're a family. And people are like, you're a business, you're not a family. But we really were, because everyone moved from, you know, different states to start this show. So for a lot of people, the team was really like everything, because we worked so much that a lot of us didn't really like get outside to like create community outside of the show, which probably was unhealthy at some times, and other times it was amazing. But it was very sad that we were ending the show. But they gave us, we knew for 3 months, and, you know, they took care of us. And I feel like for me personally, it was time for me to do something else. And I think with this program, like we ended the show on Friday, September 6th, and my orientation for NYU and Goldman started on Monday, September 9th. So it was just like right on time for me. So I'm excited. Like, I mean, being on television every weekday for 7 years is a lot of energy. And I kind of feel like I'm balancing at this point.
That timing is, that's unbelievable. That's, yeah, like, I know. Literally unbelievable.
I know. So great, though. I'm just very grateful.
So having been, this is a complicated, and it's going to sound bitchier than I intended it, which is a good way of knowing I intended a certain amount of bitch.
Okay.
But noting your illustrious career in television, what, if any, advice would you offer, let's say, the cast of New New York?
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I didn't have that type of a scale, because obviously when you enter the Bravo universe, you're not only entering on your own terms, even if you're a new franchise, you have really the support, or at least the eyeballs or interest of the whole Bravo sphere. And I think that's an even more important time to come in. And this is going to sound counterintuitive, but very grounded. When I lost my job at DBL, there were so many different ways that people interpreted that. And when I called like my mom or my husband or some of my best friends, and I'm like, so this happened, and they all had the same response. Like, Erica, you've been preparing for this for 7 years. And I think that's something that a lot of people who are in front of the camera don't think about. I came from radio and I had a lot of amazing opportunities, like especially when I started radio in Chicago, it was a very high profile job. And when I lost that job, I lost my identity. And that happened very early on for me. So I was super, super careful not to have my entire identity wrapped up in the fact that people can see my face every day on television. And I would just give that, I would say that to anyone who's going on television. It's kind of hard when you're in a place like Real Housewives because you're supposed to be larger than life. But if you can kind of separate those two things for yourself, I think you'll be a lot more balanced and a lot happier regardless of what happens.
That is great advice. And I also kind of feel like, selfishly as an audience member, I would love the Housewives to be grounded off camera and confident on camera. Like,
I would love that too.
Your words.
I would love that too. It's a very delicate balance. It's a great skill set to have. I think that there are a few housewives who definitely do it better than others. Like, I really do think that once Kyle's off camera, I think that she is a little bit more like, this is my real life. I feel that way about Giselle. Like, she's, you know, she has her like thing, and then like in the real world, like, she's Giselle, you know. I've run into Wendy in real life a few times. I feel like she's a little like that. Like, you know, she puts it on and then she's able to kind of like balance it out, especially because she has so many other projects that she's constantly trying to work on. I think a lot of those things are real for her. And then when it goes, I don't know about the bar, but the other things, it feels a little bit more in line with where her skill sets are in the real world. So I believe that these are things that she's actively building.
Yeah, the point with Giselle is interesting, because Giselle's groundedness of like, this is professional work, then I shut the door, then I actually live my life, is, I think, one of the best criticisms of her on the show. Is that, like, it has felt like her connection and maybe possibility of stakes or vulnerability hasn't been present, because she maybe is too aware of the fact that this is sort of her version of a 9-to-5, which is why I think, for me at least, this season is really promising, because I feel like we're going to see potentially a more vulnerable Giselle than we have seen in a minute.
I would agree with that. I think we've talked about this on AG before, but Giselle has had some real life drama, and a lot of people have come in to criticize her relationship, the family dynamic, things like that with her ex-husband. So this has to feel like child's play to her, because the stakes aren't as high here as they've been in her real life. But that being said, she's gotten a lot of very loud criticism and feedback, especially over the past year or so, maybe 2 years, that it feels like what we're seeing now is a response to all of that.
In a way that, does it feel organic, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think that the natural, having something so life-altering as losing a parent will really just shake you in a way to make you decide, you know, like, what path do I want to go down? And I think that adding some levity into her life might be exactly what the doctor ordered, so to speak, for her personally and professionally as a housewife.
Yeah. And the thing that was so seemingly ironic to me in the most recent episode was Karen treating Giselle's party like boilerplate housewifery, which I thought was such a miss when you think of how important it was to her and how obviously connected her father's illness and death was to having this be a possible fundraising event, a way to raise awareness. Like, Karen was playing by rules that I feel like she should have known better than to utilize.
I think for all of the balance and the presence that Giselle seemingly is bringing into that this season, Karen has lost some of that. I think that, you know, Karen came in very much on the defense, anticipating that her unfortunate DUI was going to be the main storyline. And I think we're seeing her scramble to try to find her footing and like what the conversation has been, who's going to, you know, be there as a real friend or not. And I think that that was a part of her, because I think that Karen's come in, and I love the Grand Dame, but I feel like these past couple episodes have just been constant misses for Karen.
Yeah, it makes me feel, I feel kind of like confused about it, because she still makes me laugh. She's obviously extraordinarily charismatic and watchable, but then I'm also like, you know, who are you sacrificing yourself, or is this production sacrificing you for a little bit of drama? Like, did you really think that this was a good idea? Is this what you needed to do to get focus on you in a different way than the DUI? Like, the positioning of all of it is so strange to me.
Well, I think that if you really had to go apples to apples with the Housewives of Potomac, then Giselle and Karen are the two that would be, you would able to go apples to apples with. You know, they came in at the same time. There was a history there. There's like this frenemy type dynamic that can be very light sometimes, and other times it can be quite, I mean, it can have a lot of tension behind it. And the idea that Giselle was doing something that could make her rise in the audience eyes to perhaps Grand Dame level was something that Karen might have felt like she needed to run interference on, and not understanding the sentiment behind it was problematic. It was interesting to hear Giselle's take on how she had received this information about this particular, you know, award show, and that Karen's name wasn't on it. And that whole thing felt like, to me, I believe Giselle. And it felt like she, like Karen might have been thinking, well, I can't have like come into the season with this huge scarlet letter and having all of this negative talk about me. And then Giselle comes out straight out the bat, you know, raising money for cancer research, you know, brain tumors. So I have to do something to let people know that, you know, I'm important too. It's almost like it's very elementary on that level, because it's like, oh, well, you know, I got new shoes. Well, I got new shoes and mine are name brand. You know, like it's very like, okay, all right. I mean, on the most fundamental level, like I have to one up you, and you might, like that person might have gotten new shoes and it was the first pair of new shoes that they had in 5 years, you know, and now you have to let them know that not only do you have what they have, but you can do it better.
Yeah. And you have to be really careful when you're firing a shot at Giselle, because I actually audibly gasped when the camera cut to her confessional and she said, "What is Karen being honored for? Running into a tree?" And the way she said it, I was like, oh my God, that was, I feel the sting of that. Like, it was so sharp and honestly, like, perfectly performed. Like, when Giselle is in the mood for battle, you should just tap out of the war.
Well, the thing is, Karen started the war, really. I mean, you know, it's kind of like one of those don't start none, won't be none, because Giselle wouldn't have said that, at least not in that moment, had she not fired the first shot. So, I mean, you got to be careful with things like that, because she absolutely, I mean, Giselle has a, that's the thing. It's like she has a license to say those things based on Karen's, like how Karen has reacted based on Karen's actions. Had Karen not done those things, then Giselle would have looked like Tamra looks on OC.
And how are we feeling about Tamra on Orange County this season in general? Obviously, the Shan of it all. What's your perspective in watching?
So this is interesting because I can see both sides. Like I can. I just think that Tamra is playing this all wrong. Because if you've ever been the friend who, your friend who seemingly maybe invites a lot of drama into their lives and it's constant. And we all know someone like this. You know, there's always something that's going wrong. There's a tragedy of some sort, like there's always happening. And then they're not necessarily in your mind doing what you would be doing in those situations in terms of like, maybe I'm not going to drink if I got a DUI, or maybe I will learn this particular lesson about my affinity for men who are out to basically take advantage of me, or don't have my best interests, like whatever that is. You know, you can navigate that with a friend if you're truly a friend of theirs. But when you get to a point where it's like, okay, I have had enough, this is now affecting my life. And I've been in that situation too, where my husband, who is incredibly unproblematic, I'm going to knock on wood because, you know, I don't want to invite anything to come out. No, but, you know, he's not a problematic person, and he's, you know, he's not going to just say something because he feels like saying it. By the time that my husband says something, this is a problem. It's really a problem. And so when you're in a relationship like that and you have someone who isn't really, and I don't know if Eddie's like this or not, it does seem like Eddie is quiet until he's not. But if you have someone who's saying like, this is affecting our relationship, and if you're taking the time to pour into this person that you could perhaps be utilizing over here, I can only ride with you on this journey for so long. And you're being kind of like, because it's also a way for someone who loves you to say, hey, maybe you don't have the capacity to deal with every single issue. So when they completely like go off the rails and they do something that you may have warned them about, because I've had situations like this too, I can see there being like, there's like all the signs of grief, but then there's a lot of stages of grief, but there's a lot of stages of disappointment, which can turn into animosity, which can turn into all out war, especially because there's such a thin line between love and hate. So I think that I can see Tamra's side. I think she played it incredibly wrong. The way that she played it makes me think that her lack of empathy would have been better for her had she made stricter boundaries for herself and Shannon earlier on. It wouldn't have come out this way.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely spot on. And I feel like for Tamra, she chose to respond like a real housewife instead of a friend. And that is such a hard line. It's a thin line. It's a delicate line, because if we are looking at you and feeling like you are only strategizing and being cruel, and we're not seeing any of your vulnerability, or you're telling us that, oh, it's there, it's just masked by anger, that you lose, I think, a pretty decent segment of the audience, which I think is what's happened to Tamra at this point.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And it would be also different if it were only one storyline where we're seeing this, we're seeing it in more than one place. And the crazy thing about it is, I don't think that she's wrong to be upset with Shannon. I don't think she's wrong to distance herself from the Ryan of it all. I don't think any of those things are wrong. But the way that she has done it is saying that there's like a deeper underlying issue there. And that issue seems to be her and her projection onto everyone else. So I think that's where she just completely misread the room.
As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And you know who else is? My dear, close, personal best friend and also deity, Jennifer Lopez. J-Lo is actually the reason that Google launched Google Images, because of that infamous Versace dress. And she's still, 20 years later, more sought after than ever before. With skin like hers, it's not a surprise. Love don't cost a thing, but I don't want to continue to wait for tonight. Whoa. And thanks to J-Lo Beauty, we can glow right along with her. Get that J-Lo glow for yourself with J-Lo Beauty's Deluxe Kit, the one-and-done skincare solution clinically proven to tighten and lift for instant, long-lasting results. And much like my dear best friend, Jen, I absolutely agree. My personal favorite is J-Lo's Limitless Glow face mask. It is so soothing, easy to apply, cleansed my skin, had the mask on, and truly was having a spa night at home. So if you're tired of trying to crack your own skincare code, try J-Lo Beauty for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. Want that J-Lo glow? Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls and get a special gift of 4 free masks for listeners of Andy Scrolls. Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls for 4 free masks and free shipping today. That's jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls. I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com. I started taking Hormone Harmony because for me, that time of the month feels like it became the entire month, dealing with cravings, bloating, not feeling like myself. Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. My number one, supporting hormonal balance and regulation. Hormone Harmony also helps relieve symptoms of menopause, improves sleep quality, relieves hot flashes and mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It is zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndyScrolls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndyScrolls for 15% off today.
And I don't get the sense that she has any interest in reading the room now. I think that's kind of the difficulty is I think of Tamara as a real housewife, as someone who is able to really, truly take the temperature and bend at the will of whatever she feels like needs to get done. And right now, I feel like she's crossing over into this other area or era. It's the thing that fucked her up the last time she was on the show before she was fired. I just don't have a sense here that she can. I talked about this on an episode with Gibson Johns, but that she can really genuinely humble herself.
She I don't even know if it's humility. To me, it reads desperation. Like it reads like she's panicked. And I don't know if she's panicked that she realizes now that maybe she didn't play this right, because she's had to go back on so many things. Like the idea that she would stand with Alexis Bellino, who it's become so clear at this point was a part of the reason that this lawsuit started that cost her hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that she has this selective memory about how upset and how damaging that time in her life with Shannon was, to not express any empathy for Shannon's situation, for this woman coming at her and doing this again, is just so bizarre. And it tells me, like, in my mind, it feels like she had this whole season mapped out how this was going to go, and nothing is going the way that she intended. So now it just looks like she's constantly like sticking her foot in her mouth. And it's like, at this point, what do you do? Like, do you go all in, or do you try to pivot and change course? And I think that she's too far in to change it up now.
I also feel like there's such a difference between someone backpedaling, trying to explain maybe behavior that we don't love, certainly, an understatement of the year, neither does Shannon, but also adding on top of that, the thing that I cannot get away from when I'm watching every single episode is how much fun Tamra is having with this. She seems to be relishing in trying to press buttons, trying to antagonize, press buttons, do whatever she can. She just seems to be enjoying it so much that when she flips into, not to say you can't feel a multitude of things at once, but like, I find it hard to believe that this is coming from a place of really true upset. It could be exhaustion, and now she's trying to punish Shannon for taking so much of her time, but I don't buy that it's coming from anything else than aspects of Tamra's soul that are just really fucking dark.
I see it as someone who is relishing in a I told you so moment. And up until this point, like what we're watching, she hasn't received feedback for. So I think that is where that idea might be coming from. Like, you're just so sure that what you thought was going to happen happened. You have been navigating this in a certain way. And now she's just like, you know, I told you so. I told you so. I was right and you were wrong. And now everything that comes to you is all coming to you because of what you've done to make these things happen. And the thing about it is, she's not wrong. It just doesn't bode well for her, especially because Shannon came in with a lot of contrition and, she's very wounded bird, but I don't even think that she would have gotten that degree of sympathy and empathy just because of her history as a wounded bird. I think that it was all of the things that were coming into place at that point, like Tamra's disregard for, humanity at that point. The fact that Shannon obviously was, she made the choice. She's suffering the consequences. And I mean, especially from the court of public opinion, like we're not really getting that whole time where it was all court of public opinion. OC wasn't on. There were so many narratives happening that she clearly had no control over. And then you get on the show, Tamra's like all in her face about it. And then John sues her, a guy that we never liked, with a woman that we can't stand. Like, it's just like a perfect storm of like, all these things that kind of worked in Shannon's favor.
Don't we think, though, that Tamra got some feedback from like the rest of the cast, everybody except for apparently Heather Dubrow, that like maybe her behavior like was crossing the line. I mean, I know she hasn't gotten the groundswell of negativity that can only happen when hundreds of thousands of people are telling you you suck, but or at least online, tens of thousands. I don't really know that she was blissfully ignorant. I just feel like she thought everybody else was wrong, or she didn't care.
I think she thought that people were wrong, and I think that she was blissfully ignorant. Because if you think of, like, in my opinion, Gina would be the voice of reason. But if you're Tamara and you're like, yeah, but you had a DUI too, so maybe you're just sensitive to this, you know, discussion. Like, I don't think that she thought that we were going to look at, because the first person I was looking at to see their reaction from was Gina, for the most obvious reasons, because Shannon was not very kind to her or empathetic about the situation. And I think the way that Gina responded, it would have been the best move for everyone else to kind of follow suit, not necessarily, you know, like coddle her, but just that the way that she so perfectly came in with empathy, but true concern and wanting to make sure that she was okay, probably giving her a lot of the things that Gina wished that she had when she was going through it, which is just an extreme level of emotional intelligence that Tamara doesn't seemingly have or just is opting not to display.
When it comes to emotional intelligence, I want to shift gears just a little bit. Who on Salt Lake City do you feel like carries that light, if anyone?
Salt Lake City emotional intelligence.
Obviously the most grounded of any franchise.
Oh, man. Oh, that's hard. It's so hard. I kind of think I would almost have to go with Heather Gay, but I don't know if it's because she's so aware of the game that she knows when to implement it, or if it's organic to who she is as a person. I think if you think about like how she, because it's not like necessarily like coming from a place of altruism, but do we get altruism anywhere, like anywhere in any franchise? I don't know. I feel like she has the ability to do the dance. And I think that is where I can see her being perhaps the most emotionally intelligent. She's just aware. And I do think for emotional maturity, there is a sense of awareness that you have to have. So I would have to say it's Heather.
And how are we feeling about Whitney these days? Whitney finding her voice?
Whitney... So Whitney is always going to be a caricature of herself on this franchise. I mean, everyone is to some capacity, but I think that she's just so aesthetically, like, it's hard not to see it, that she becomes a caricature. I think I like the idea of her being a little bit more standing in her truth and her power, even if it misses the mark a little bit. It's like, yeah, go all in. Like, it feels like there's a growth there. But I also feel like Whitney can fall victim more than some of the others to being what she thinks other people expect her to be, or maybe picking up a little bit too much, because there are people who kind of like pick up on other people's personalities or mannerisms or, you know, thoughts. And I think that she's kind of a sponge like that, whether it's intentional or not.
I feel like Salt Lake City, in the best, most wonderful way, is living a little bit in the upside down. Or maybe that's just my experience watching it. Because if you told me that Whitney and Angie were going to get into some drawn out battle with Lisa Barlow about Lisa Barlow, like, not listening as a friend, I am obsessed with Lisa Barlow, but I would be curious to hear their thoughts on the matter. And also Mary Cosby joining full time, I would think I would be feeling more uncomfortable about that move than I am. It's like, now I'm watching these scenes and I'm watching Lisa Barlow and I'm like, yeah, you're giving me Bar Legend energy right now, Lisa. Like, you are disemboweling these women. And also, who am I genuinely enjoying the, I don't want to say the most, but because again, I die for Barlow, but like, who am I enjoying a ton more than I ever fucking expected? Mary Cosby, who feels like for the first time, this woman is in on the joke. Even not always big tampon asterisks to that, but like, it feels like she's more connected to this universe and wants to have fun.
This is an interesting season for Salt Lake City because it is kind of the season of contemporaries, because we haven't seen these type of matchups with some of the women before. Like, if you think about Angie, it being friends with either Lisa or Whitney, which one makes more sense? I would say Whitney. I think when she's friends with Lisa, then she's just a soldier for Lisa. Whitney and Angie feel a little bit more like contemporaries. Mary and Bronwyn feel like contemporaries. They have a lot of stuff in common. It's not, you know, like exactly the same, but like the idea of who they're married to, there being scrutiny behind that for one reason or another. They clearly have a lot of money at their disposals. They live very eclectic lives. Mary's never had a contemporary, even when Monica was trying to buddy up to her. So that feels a little bit more natural. The Bronwyn-Lisa dynamic was always going to be a problem because clearly they had a relationship outside of the show. And when you have someone who's been on the show for as long as Lisa's been on the show, I always question, is it where casting is that this person hasn't been presented before? Or is it where they were that this cast member can't trust that this person is going to come on the show and not try to take it over or fight with them or utilize information against them in their real lives? So Bronwyn going more team Mary, and I feel like that relationship is just going to continue to grow, makes more sense to me. Meredith and Lisa are always going to kind of like revert back to each other maybe a little bit, but that trust that originally was there, I don't think is ever going to come back. And I think Heather bringing on, what's her name? The Osmond girlfriend.
Oh my God.
What is it?
Light of my life.
Brittany. Yeah. Bringing her on. I think that Heather has never really had a soldier because Whitney isn't ever going to be a soldier. Whitney doesn't have the capacity for soldier because she can kind of, she's susceptible to going where the wind blows. So I think that Brittany would be really great for Heather, but not necessarily really great on the show.
Are we not just, I know that it's like, kind of uncomfortable, the Brittany of it all, because we are watching a woman flop, not even to me on the show, but like in her real life. And that can, that can be tough to like process. I can only imagine what Brittany's experience is watching the show. Although my guess is like if she lives at such a heightened state of denial, she might be able to convince herself that some of these decisions don't come across as, I really don't mean this to be a dick, but like as like pathetic as they, because I get her. I connect with Brittany, but I just feel like this is such a sad person who is deeply broken, who we don't even know the full picture of what has happened with her past relationships, divorce, the estrangement from the kids. Like, there's just so much about her that makes her fascinating to watch on screen, but also someone who I don't think has the internal capacity to stay on for very long. So that makes me feel kind of sad for her. Do you think she's like not watchable?
I don't think that she's not watchable. I think that from the moment she walked on, and you know, you can kind of tell like when people have a lot of confidence, like a Bronwyn. Like, Bronwyn walked in like, this is my show. This is my house and I live here. Okay. She was like Diana Ross. Okay. Now, Brittany came in a little bit more like tiptoeing. And then in the very first like glimpse of an interaction or any type of adversity, she just immediately like got back into her shell. And I don't think she was right after that costume comment. Like, I don't think that she, I think that a bell was rung in her head that has made her completely discombobulated. The other thing is my feeling, and I could be totally wrong, but I think we all know a Brittany. And
if you don't know a Brittany, God forbid, you might be one.
Yeah, we all know a Brittany. And I don't think that she, I think she means well. I think she's a nice enough lady. You know, I don't think she's really out for blood, but I do feel like she's one of those people who just believes that all she needs is for this one particular thing to happen and everything's going to be okay. She is the side of what would have happened with Jen Pedranti had Ryan not had money in the moment and was ready to like take her in with her children. Like, they both are betting on life saving them. And Jen, we're seeing like in the moment, like, we don't know what's going to happen with that situation. But right now, Jen's okay. You know, like, she has a home for her children, she and her children to live under. Brittany is when you swing and miss and you don't find that person and you're like, I think this is the person, but they're not really sure about you. Like, for whatever reason, there's something happening in that Jen Ryan dynamic where they can go along to get along, at least as we see it in the moment. But Brittany didn't get that kind of luck. She swung hard and she's missing because this man is making a fool of you on national television.
Brittany is someone who seems to be choosing to date a casino, and she doesn't understand that the house is always going to win. Like, poor, poor, dumb Brittany, who I really like and empathize with, but it's also somewhat tragic to watch someone allow herself to be treated in such a disrespectful way. The fact that this man can't even acknowledge, and I'm making the assumption, but cannot even acknowledge that he has shtupped her. Like, he goes straight into like, you've ruined the friendship. He's not even saying fuck buddy. He's just saying pal. Like, that's tough to watch. You know, she's girl, been treated poorly so many times. This is oy vey. Oy vey, I say.
Girl.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see, I really want to know how old the brow lady is.
Oh, you know, she's in her, I would say, late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
She's not, and that is just, nor are any of us, by the way, but yeah.
Yeah. I can just see, I can see her, and this is the type of guy, because I'm just calling it like I'm receiving it. I don't know. But I can see him like being like, he wants the younger version of her. He wants the younger version who doesn't have children of her. And he's the type of guy, like, we all know an Osmond like this. Hey, not Donnie. Donnie was a longtime friend of the show. He's always been very nice, very nice to me. I'm not saying anything about, but yo, Donnie, come get your boy. Okay. Because you, that's the reality of a situation like this. And I'm not saying it to downplay older women. Like, I mean, I clearly not, that's not the point of that, but I'm telling you, like, we have to live in reality. And the reality is you are trying, which is probably a reason why your daughter, like a situation with your daughters, because depending on how old their her daughters are too, they're probably calling it. Like, these are the dudes that are trying to get with us. And it's just the truth. I'm not saying every man that age or in that situation is thinking like that, but when you have a situation, when it's in your face and he's not committing to this situation and he's after the brow girl, calling, like, that is such an older guy trying to hook up with a younger girl move. That's why I'm assuming that she's younger, because you tried to call her through Instagram. I already know what time it is. And Brittany, it is not your time. It's not your time with this man. Now, I'm not saying it's not going to be not your time with any man, but if you continue to walk around with a scent of desperation on yourself on national TV, it's going to be a long time before you might get another chance to figure out whatever you're trying to figure out, to close whatever deal you're trying to close, because she is trying to close a deal. That is a woman on the hunt for a deal.
But then what does it mean that, like, during that game of Godforsaken pickleball, Brittany is, or was it during that game or was it during the dinner where Brittany was like, but I know that I, you know, choose men, or I have chosen men instead of my daughters, and it fills me with, like, guilt and shame. And I mean, understanding the root of some of this is 50%, but the other 50% is like making different choices. And I don't know. I would wish for Brittany that she was in a position to, like, choose well for herself first and then kind of expand from there. Because if the roots are fucked, I don't know what good can grow from it. But I'm not getting the vibe that she is aware or cares that, like, she's also a person she should respect. She's also a person she should take care of. She's also a person, one could argue, that, like, maybe she could feel some element of guilt of how she has treated herself, like, what she has allowed. I'm not blaming her for, you know, being manipulated by this guy who's quite obviously a piece of shit, but I am saying, like, at what point, while telling us you regret choices you made in your life, do you start to make different ones? Or does she just feel like this is the only guy and she's going to try to make this bad equation okay?
I think Brittany got the ill setup, and a lot of people have, especially when we're talking about women. I think, was Heather talking about in the faith, then you can get into heaven without having children, but you can't get into heaven without having a man?
Oh,
was that Heather on the someone, or am I confusing shows? It was about the Mormon faith, and it said, and I can't, oh, maybe it wasn't this show. Who
was it? Secret Lives of Mormon Wives?
I haven't watched that yet.
Oh, you need to immediately.
Maybe I listened to a I remember hearing this. It was very specific about why women will sometimes, like, alienate or deprioritize their children over the relationship with a man, because the relation, maybe my friend told me this. I do have a friend who used to be more, I just remember very clearly. I was like, what? Yes. And so I'm like, well, in that case, like, I can see, like, Brittany got the super ill setup. Like, if you were brought up this way to believe that that's the way that, you know, your life becomes whole, basically, that's the way that you get to enjoy the kingdom on earth and in heaven, or whatever your belief system is, then of course you're always going to be chasing this idea, chasing these people who may not want to be chased, or maybe they want to be chased, but only chased and never caught. So it's sad. I mean, I see it. Like I said, we all know a Britney. Like, there's no way to teach someone how to value themselves until they realize that they don't have value for themselves, until they admit that to themselves, until they hate what they can't tolerate about themselves. Like, it's deep.
And I also wonder if she's having that conversation, or she's had it, or whatever the circumstance might be. Like, where is that conversation taking place? Is it immediately after someone is dumping you? Is it immediately after, like, fleeing a bad situation? Is it in, God forbid, a therapist's office where she can process some of this, but do also, like, the active labor of changing, hopefully, the future of her life? Because the present feels relatively stagnant. Like, it's, I don't know. It's the whole thing is, she's fascinating to me because I kind of can't look away, but I really hope that I can. And I assume we're not going to see her. I don't think she has real ability to last on this show for maybe more than a minute. I think we're getting kind of the best of the worst right now, which is also so depressing. I don't even know. It's wild. It's like, what's another version of sucking up all the oxygen in the room? That's not what she's doing at all. I just want to make sure she has enough oxygen to live.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I was trying to think, I got a feeling about another woman who came on a show, and I was like, oh no, this was like the worst decision she's ever made, because it was like, especially when you come on as not even a one season housewife, when you come on as a one season friend and you give that much of yourself, and it's just not reciprocated in any way in terms of like longevity or financial reward and all of the everything that's coming in or coming up about you is negative or not complimentary. I mean, I'm trying to think like who the last person that happened to was. I want to say somebody on Atlanta. Maybe it wasn't the last person, but it definitely, I mean, there's been someone, you know, on almost every franchise that you're like, why did you come? I felt that way about Taylor Armstrong coming back. I was like, girl, you shouldn't have done that. You should have kept that. Yeah.
I didn't think that she worked as a friend. No. You're like, no. That's a no. That's a definite no.
I just think that she displayed so many behaviors that I think we all had a lot of, we were willing to go along with it because of the severity of the tragedy in her life. It was more understandable. But to come back and display those same types of behaviors, what, 10, 15 years later, it was sad. I didn't want to see that because I was hoping that she would come back in a more healed place, and she didn't seem incredibly healed.
I got into that on a Patreon episode, and AG sent in a satchel about connecting it to Alexis and talking about the fact that, like, sometimes we hope someone has changed, but maybe we should just stop doing that. Like, maybe the expectation should be directly connected to when we last saw this person, which I think is also the most realistic way possible as a Bravoholic, but also like a human adult, you know, like, just time does not equate maturity, certainly, nor growth. And especially when there have been such gaps and a person's trauma might have been frozen on television in a specific season, to just assume, as I have so many times before, that like there will have been some sort of processing or something else that will be connected to a change in behavior is just can be incredibly unrealistic.
Yeah. Or sometimes people surprise you. But I think that for some people in these situations might be like, I spiraled out of control. I'm changing my life. But a part of changing my life means there's no place for this in my life anymore. So maybe we just don't get the other side of that because they're like, reality TV doesn't fit into this new chapter. You know, it doesn't fit into who I am anymore. And then they kind of just move on with their lives. So maybe we only get a return if they are frozen.
I also, this is like sort of a left turn, but I also do just kind of wonder, I'm sure based in large part on my own kind of opinion and interpretation this early on, but like, I do kind of wonder like what's going to happen with Becky Minkoff. Like, was this a terrible idea for her, for not really us, but like mostly her, I guess. Is this going to pay off in a way that makes sense? Or is it just enough if people are talking about you, even if some of that conversation is like, why, what's happening?
I don't know. I actually had an interview with the Church of Scientology in Denver. And I just, like, I'm very, just questions. Like, I still don't understand, like, you know, like, I mean, like, as in they came on to the platform I was on and I conducted the interview, not like I was interviewing.
No, I didn't think you were interviewing to be like the new alien from the galaxy that you get to find out about if you give them $130,000. Yeah. No, I got what you're saying.
Yeah. And I just went about it with questions. I just had a lot of questions. And I think also toying that line of, you know, what people are talking about, especially, I mean, back then, internet fodder wasn't the way that internet fodder is today. But certainly kind of toying that line of like, well, why are people, you know, saying negative things about, you know, I just played it very much like question, because I still really do not understand what that's all about. But her response about, well, if people have questions, just send them to me. And I'm like, girl, you open up yourself for like a whole, you can't say, if you have questions, just come to me on television where people are going to try to come to you with a whole lot of questions. Like, you certainly opened yourself up a lot for that. For people to ask questions. I mean, so I don't know. I don't know what it'll be. My first pair of like really, wait, no, they weren't Rebecca Minkoff. They were Barbara Bowie's. Does she have shoes? Rebecca Minkoff?
I feel like maybe, but that could be 100% wrong. I assume so. I don't think it was just handbags. I think it was like a whole thing.
Yeah. Were they Rebecca Minkoff or Barbara Bowie? Anyway, they were my first nice pair of shoes. And I walked out like about a foot out my door, got the heel caught in a grate. And and they were patent leather on the outside wrapping. But on the inside, it was a gold plate that went up the back of the shoe and then all the way down, like how Louis Vuitton's has the red. So it was a gold plate that went up and then down the side of the shoe. So when I went to try to find someone who could potentially fix it, everyone was kind of like, now. And I don't remember if they were Rebecca Minkoff or Barbara Bowie.
I mean,
they were a lot of money, whoever they were. And I still cry about it.
According to Bryn, just head on over to Nordstrom Rack.
Is that where they sell?
I mean, that was her LOL. But like Nordstrom Rack is like nothing to sneeze about. Nordstrom Rack is also like very expensive. So I don't know how far that insult is going to travel if the person you're insulting says, and we choose to believe her, that she's running a $100 million company that's named, you know, in her name. I don't know, but it'll go somewhere. I mean, yeah. You know, Listen, Erica Cobb, I could talk to you forever. This has been such a goddamn delight. You are like a literal dream guest, and the just kind of synergy that you're able to find in crossing franchises is to me just really delightful. I really genuinely am here for any moment that we can record, even though I am obviously holding it against you that I did not see you when you were in New York, working with Goldman Sachs, but no big deal. Can you tell the AGs what you've got cooking, where they can follow you on social, mention it all?
Yes. First of all, I am so sad I did not make it to the Clawfest because, girl, you know. But also, I will be back in New York in December, and I am inviting you to my graduation party. Yes. I'm like, so I hope you're there. We can talk offline. I'm like so excited because it's just going to be like a dinner party for like 12 people.
Oh my God, I'm so honored. Oh my God, what is a gal gonna fucking wear? I don't know if I'm gonna be allowed to wear Manolos when that's gonna happen, but you know, yeah. I'll be in a fabulous pair if I am post-surgery. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm so
excited. Yes. So in December, so I will be back and hopefully I'll have enough time to like stop into the Clawfest before and all that jazz. But we are doing a podcast now with the host of Daily Blast Live. It's called Daytime Talk After Dark. I did the live show right before the show wrapped, and we took that and we have been doing Daytime Talk After Dark. We're live on YouTube every Tuesday, 7 o'clock Eastern. So I'm off to my recording now. So you can join on YouTube. Generally, it's the five of us. Occasionally, people are like off doing other things. So tonight, there's the three of us, but that's not really tonight because this is obviously going to air later. But every Tuesday, you'll get at least some of us. And we do some trending topics. We do entertainment. So it's like a nighttime little kiki version of us, what we were doing during the day. So very relaxed, very chill. There's a bonus episode that drops on Fridays, and you can get it both on YouTube as well as Spotify. So make sure you check that out. And always, you know, you can listen to Come Back with Erica Cobb. I've had some really great guests on this season, including Karamo Brown and Marion Jones, talking about their comeback stories. So check that out. New episodes drop on Sundays on Come Back with Erica Cobb. And of course, you can follow me at Erica Cobb on all podcast platforms.
Oh my God, that's so exciting. The new pod, that's a big fucking deal.
That's incredible. Yeah, we're trucking along. Like, I mean, we're independent creators now, y'all. Like, we gotta come with it. So, but it's been a lot of fun. And this is like the fifth or sixth week. There's a lot of stuff there now.
Wow, that's great. Oh my God. That gives me a little bit of inspo because I'm thinking, you know, 8 or 9 years in the podcasting game, I'm like, maybe eventually I should join YouTube or whatever. So that gives me a little push in the ass to get my ducks in a row. Listen, 2025, new beginnings.
Yes. You got this.
I got this. I probably don't, but we'll see. It's a little bit of a to be continued. We'll see what happens. Listen, have you joined the Andy's Girls Patreon? Number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes like a Satchel Spectacular that is up now at patreon.com/Andy's Girls. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. Erica Cobb, thank you so much for coming back. This was a total joy.
Thank you, my Sherpa, my Dame. I appreciate you so much.
I appreciate you. And thanks to all of the AGs for listening. We will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.